Okay, so let's unpack this. Today, we're taking a deep dive into something really unique. It's frankly quite a raw source. An unmoderated online general discussion board. Imagine, like a digital town square, but totally unfiltered. Anything goes, discussions happen incredibly fast.
Exactly. And what's key here is that this isn't some polished article, you know, or formal research. It's the real deal, this unfiltered, sometimes chaotic stream of consciousness from one specific corner of the internet.
So our mission really is to navigate this digital landscape, pull out the surprising bits of knowledge and try to understand the dynamics of this unique communication style.
Yeah, even when it gets intense or frankly offensive sometimes. It's like peeking behind the curtain of a very specific online culture. Raw is definitely the word.
So diving in, what immediately jumped out at me was just how informal it all is and fast. So fast.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just this constant flow of short comments, right? People replying directly to each other. It feels fragmented, but there's a real energy there. Did you get that too?
Totally. It's this fascinating mix. You get really personal opinions right next to these super specific inside jokes that, you know, only the regulars would get, and then broad cultural references thrown in. It really shows how these spaces are kind of a hybrid. What can you say? Part public square, part private chat room.
Definitely. Which does make you wonder, what does general discussion even mean in a place like this?
That's the question, isn't it? How general can it be when it's so niche?
And we need to be upfront about this. Transparency is key. A big part of the source material is, well, some pretty harsh language. Crude stuff, sometimes hateful, disturbing comments, slurs, offensive statements, they're present. So for this deep dive, we're just going to report that this content exists. It's a feature of this kind of unfiltered space. We're absolutely not reproducing it or endorsing it.
Right. It's essential context, though, for understanding the, let's say, the intensity you find in these unmoderated zones. You have to acknowledge it's there.
Okay, so moving past the general vibe, as we got deeper, the language itself became really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, this word S-M-U-R-F kept popping up over and over.
Oh, right. S-M-U-R-F.
Used almost like this all-purpose intensifier. Or maybe an expletive. Sometimes modifying other harsh words, even.
Yeah, it was versatile.
And then there was this figure, M-E-X, lots of mentions. Seemed like some kind of influential person, maybe quasi-admin.
Someone even thanked MEX for adding a hide post button, apparently. Gave them some perceived authority.
So what do these things, these terms, tell us?
Well, it's almost like a secret language, isn't it? Digital shorthand. These aren't just random words. They signal you're an insider, you belong, I speak your language, that sort of thing.
An emergent lexicon.
Precisely. But maybe the weirdest, most surprising example was just the number 32.
32. Yes, yeah. It was everywhere, often with like zero context.
None at all. And the source eventually clarifies, sort of.
Yeah.
It's partly about the number of teeth in an adult mouth.
It's like the slight chuckle.
But also it's a meme because it's 2^5.
2^5.
Yeah. And it just shows up randomly. Like there was that comment about the Kaiju No 8 character. Someone saying, I'm only 32. That's not an Oji-san. Like protesting being called old. Using the meme number.
Wow. Okay, so teeth and math. That's wonderfully specific and kind of bizarre.
Right.
But it shows, doesn't it? It's not just random. It's a very specific self-referential joke that binds them together, even if it makes absolutely no sense to anyone.
Exactly. It's the secret handshake. Shows how these tiny, seemingly meaningless details can become really embedded cultural markers in online groups.
Yeah, building that unique cultural DNA almost from scratch.
It's quite something. Shows how creative and how insular these online communities can get with their language.
Okay, so this deep dive also got into something pretty raw, actually. Discussions about online identity. Authenticity. There was this real back and forth. Some people arguing for being totally open, vulnerable, while others were strongly for keeping up a mask, you know?
Yeah.
Presenting an idealized, curated version of themselves. Someone literally said, they're happier when I put on a mask.
That tension is fascinating. You want connection, but you're scared of what? Rejection? Getting hurt?
Yeah.
They even brought up characters like Shinji from Evangelion.
Oh, yeah. The classic example of struggling with connection.
Right. And this idea that bonds might create blind spots, like a fear of intimacy itself.
Wow.
And someone mentioned having trolls remorse, but still preferring the mask, not wanting sympathy, just wanting control over how they're seen. There was even Hashtag mask gang, hashtag.
Hashtag mask game.
Yeah, okay.
So what do you think? How do these personas, masked, vulnerable, whatever, how do they actually shape the way people interact there, the whole community dynamic?
That's a really good question. Does the mask eventually just become who you are online? Or is it always a performance? It's hard to tell from the outside. And, you know, this community wasn't just talking about themselves. They were engaging pretty deeply with pop culture, too.
Oh, yeah. Like what? Well, like Breaking Bad. Lively debates there. People really dissecting the morally gray dilemmas, calling out Hollywood tropes.
The armchair critics.
Pretty much. Questioning character choices.
Yeah.
The whole narrative arc. It wasn't just passive consumption.
Interesting. But it went beyond just critique, right? I saw a lot of creative energy, too.
Totally. People were proposing actual fan-made games. Really detailed ideas.
Like the Quake mods.
Yeah. Taking elements from, what was it, Bomber Girl?
Yep. The arcade game.
Right. And turning them into Quake mods for new game modes. Someone suggested a Kirby Air Ride Quake.
Chuckles. Okay, that sounds chaotic.
And the Team Fortress Quake, explicitly to, like, reclaim it from Valve. They argue the original Quake TF was better.
Wow, deep cuts there. Real dedication.
And maybe the most detailed thing was this plan for a Pokemon ROM hack tournament.
Oh, yeah, the monotype thing.
Exactly. National Dex Monotype. Double battles. They were working out all the rules. Choosing a single box legend as your ace.
Right, like your big gun.
Debating the new Terra mechanics, whether to ban them, even talking game balance, which creature types were viable. They were even assigning board members roles, like gym leaders.
That's incredible, the sheer amount of energy they pour into not just consuming media, but actively adapting it, creating their own rules, their own competitive scenes. It's amazing.
It really is.
And that creative, maybe slightly countercultural vibe, it extended to business ideas too, didn't it? This Phantomer concept.
Phantomer.
Right.
Positioned as the anti-fan gamer.
Yeah, fan gamer being, you know, the big popular site for official-ish game merch.
So Phantomer was meant to represent, what was the phrase? What's left after fandom had the dignity to die?
Chuckles. Quite the statement.
A very counterculture stance. They wanted to focus on obscure stuff. Unreleased Dujinsoft, failed Kickstarters,
yeah.
The TRVE weird guy underdogs.
So championing the overlooked, the failures, the truly niche stuff within fandom.
Exactly. It's a fascinating little snapshot of a potential counter-movement in fan merchandising, all born out of this discussion board.
Born from wanting to support the stuff that usually gets ignored.
Shifting gears a bit, though, there was also this really quite poignant story that emerged from a user named Rudy, talking about his struggle just to get reliable internet access in Russia.
Ah, yes. That was quite striking.
He described it being monopolized by this giant corporation using what he called web-bending tactics, making sites like the forum itself, Medjidokun, almost impossible to reach.
Yeah.
And his phrase, 2032 is already here for me. That really hit hard. That sense of digital control, isolation, already being a reality for him.
It's chilling. And zooming out, his personal story sparked this whole debate within the thread itself, didn't it?
It did. But the root cause, was it capitalism in general?
Yeah.
Or was it a specific kind of corporatism?
Okay.
You know, where huge companies basically control infrastructure and influence government for profit.
Right. Which raises that huge question.
Yeah.
What actually happens to these grassroots online communities when the internet itself, the basic access, becomes a tool of control? And the users, they were already brainstorming solutions, weren't they? Pushing for mesh nets, these decentralized networks.
Or creating bunker threads on other websites just to keep the connection alive if their main site went down.
It shows incredible resilience, but also maybe a bit of desperation as they face this potential information fragmentation.
Definitely. And just to reiterate for our listeners, as we do in these deep dives, we're presenting these viewpoints, capitalism versus corporatism. The proposed solutions impartially. Just reporting what was in the source discussion.
Absolutely. No endorsement, just observation of the debate as it unfolded.
So we've covered a lot. I'm unpacking all this. What really stands out to you from this whole dive into such an unfiltered online space?
You know, it's the paradox, I think. These places can be so chaotic, intense, sometimes, deeply transgressive, as we noted. But at the same time, they're incredibly vibrant. Arenas for really authentic human expression, maybe because they're unfiltered. For niche creativity, unexpected social commentary. They really are like laboratories, aren't they? For language, for identity, for community. Warts and all.
Warts and all is a good way to put it. We saw the language, the memes, the vulnerability versus the masks. The fan creations, the business ideas, even these big geopolitical access issues.
It's a microcosm.
So thinking about all this, what does it mean for you, listening right now, in today's digital world, which feels increasingly shaped by algorithms, by moderation, by big corporate interests, what kinds of communities, what kinds of connections, what kind of maybe unbridled creativity might still be thriving in these few remaining unfiltered corners?
Maybe more importantly, what do these often messy, often raw spaces actually teach us about human interaction itself, about expression when the guardrails are down in this digital age?
Something to mull over, perhaps, until our next deep dive.